This is the Edinburgh Reporter podcast, and today I'm with Andrea Baker. Andrea, tell me about you. I feel I know you, and yet only because I have met you in the person. And then I realised when I started looking into you a little, there's a whole lot more to you than meets the eye. So first of all, where are you from, and how are you in Edinburgh? Tell me a little about that.
It's a fairly long and complicated story. I'm originally from Massachusetts in the United States, as you can tell from my twang. And I moved to Germany from where I was living in San Francisco in 1997 and spent a significant portion of my early and middle career based in Germany. And then went to Australia with my then partner, now husband, who happens to be from Inverness. And so we were in Australia and both decided that we didn't want to be landlocked in Germany anymore. So we packed up and moved to Scotland. And so I have been living in Scotland since 2005 and became a citizen 7 years ago. And I sort of describe myself as American by birth and Scottish by choice.
That's terrific. So now we can call you our own.
I am indeed. I'm Scottish. Yes, thank you. indeed.
You know, you just have this fantastic singing voice, and I read a little about where you did your training and things like that. But how do you develop such a voice, and when did you know you had this voice?
The joke in my family is that I came out singing. So I come from a musical family, have always wanted to be a singer, and started singing as a young kid. My first voice teacher was my mum, and I was lucky enough to be in a church where the minister was a trained tenor. So I started singing recitals as a kid, singing classical music as a very young kid. And back in the day, in the 70s, when I was growing up, schools still had orchestras and we did operas and musical theater. So I did my first opera as a kid in high school and have been singing ever since, actually, and made my debut in San Francisco. Actually, Scotland has always featured rather prominently in my career. I got my first professional job as an opera singer at San Francisco Opera, and I was in the chorus under the extraordinary chorus master, Ian Robertson, who is also from Edinburgh. And my conductor, my general music director, was Donald Runicles. So that was my first sort of season in opera in San Francisco, but even then it was a very Scottish season. And so from there, I came to Europe and I made my debut in Italy in 1996. So I've been a professional singer since 1994.
It's truly an international story. And, you know, there is something about being, you know, an international. Do we call you an opera star or do we call you a singer? Because I think you have such a wide repertoire.
Well, I've been in the game long enough that there are careers change and evolve. 15 years ago, I would have said I'm an opera singer. Today, I say I am a singer and presenter. So, yes, things do change. With my piece, Sing Sister Sing, I sort of delved into the world of blues and gospel and jazz and even a little disco. So I'm excited to say that other than opera, I have other exciting music to sing that sort of expanded my repertoire of late.
And that's where I met you, was in the cafe at the Rose Theatre Cafe with Richard Lewis, who was previously a councillor and culture convener here in the city, and he's a musician, and he was just playing the piano and you were just singing, and then suddenly we had the whole room was just full of this wonderful music that you can produce. And yes, that's something very different from what you're going to be doing this year at the festival. So tell me a little about that, because that also has a Scottish connection. This and I get these words muddled up all the time. So it's the song cycle, Woman Life Song.
Yes, it's called Woman Life Song, and it was commissioned by a donor in New York for Jesse Norman. And the music is written by Judith Weir, and the poetry, and I'll get all this right, is Maya Angelou, Toni Morrison, and Clarissa Pinkola Estes. And they are three of our most heralded poets. Maya Angelou is a woman who I have idolized and whose poetry and work has been something really important to me since I was really young and discovered her work. Like me, she started in Porgy and Bess, like many of us in the game. And so she was one of the writers on this piece. And Toni Morrison, of course, is also a Pulitzer Prize winning author, as is Clarissa. And the piece is about the life of a woman from a female perspective, but a traditionally African-American female perspective and a Latinx American perspective. And this spoke to me in particular because it's also written by a woman. It's written by Judith Weir, great Scottish composer. And of course, for one of the greatest singers of the 20th century, Jessie Norman. Now, I know that sounds absolutely bonkers why anybody in their right mind would want to tackle this piece, but it feels like a piece to me that needs to be sung. It needs to be, these words, these feelings, this story needs to come out. It's about the life cycle of a woman. And although it comes from a particularly African-American perspective, this woman could be any woman. And it goes through youth, it goes through sorrow, it goes through the joy of first love, it goes through loss, and it brings you out the other end looking forward to a new adventure. And that really speaks to me as I'm a woman of a certain age. And after COVID, there are many adventures in front of me that I never sort of expected to be happening. And this is one of them. So I'm really honored to be doing the piece. It hasn't been performed since 2000 when Jessie Norman did it at the Proms. And I'm even more honored to be performing with my old college buddy, William Eddins. We both went to university together. And to be working for the first time with the Chinique Orchestra, which is Britain and Europe's only Black and minority ethnic orchestra. They're an extraordinary band. And I'm honored to be able to be standing on the stage with a Black team performing classical music here in the International Festival in my home city. So I'm really thankful to the festival for granting my cherry on the top of the cake musical fantasy wish. So yeah, I'm working hard to somehow live up even to, in just a small way, the huge shoes that Jessie Norman left behind when she sadly passed away 18 months ago.
Yeah, it's an incredible piece, and I've listened to some of it, and I'm in no way would I describe myself as a singer, but it sounds terribly technically difficult.
And I think it's really important. We keep talking these days now about Black composers and about female composers and about finally bringing the female perspective on life to the stage and to express those feelings from a female perspective, as opposed to having our lives written about by men. And this piece in particular really highlights that. It's a bear of a sing. It's about 50 minutes all in one go. And we're performing it twice in one day. So it's going to be a vocal challenge, in particular because we've been out of work for 15 months. So getting back up to speed and getting your stamina going has really been hard work, but good and challenging work, especially to sink my teeth into something new, which is exciting. It's always exciting to learn a new piece and get to learn a new composer. I've never sung any of Judith Weir's work, although I'm familiar with her work and really enjoy her compositions. This is the first piece of hers that I'll be singing. So I'm excited for that musical collaboration to happen.
It's amazing. I do think that post COVID, there are many exciting journeys to go on. And I do think for you, I hear what you're saying. You haven't actually performed in the last 15 months or so, but very few people have. But I do think that this is a big new adventure. And part of the big new adventure is the fact that it's going to be sung outside under a tented ceiling, as it were. The International Festival are calling them pavilions, but of course they are just big tents, really. And so that alone gives a whole new dimension to what will be your performance.
Well, Well, it does. And I think particularly with our beautiful, wonderful Scottish weather, we may have the gods adding an extra instrument. But I studied as a young person at the Aspen Music Festival, and the Aspen Music Festival is an open air venue. And so that's pretty common in the States. Very often in the summer, you perform outdoors, Tanglewood's outdoors. Where I grew up, we had the famous symphony orchestra hatch shell, which is basically a big giant shell. On the harbor in Boston, so all summer long they had concerts outdoors. So it's something I'm familiar with, and looking forward to bringing sort of a different energy here to Edinburgh. And we'll just hope that the weather gods play with us and allow us to have 45 or 50 minutes of quiet and not too much wind and rain. So yeah, it'll be exciting, and it also allows us to perform for an audience, which is something I haven't done in almost my last performance was February 2020.
And where did you perform then?
Peter Grimes in Germany at the State Theatre of Hessen. So it's been quite a long time without performing for an audience. I've done lots of video work and brought my show Sing Sister Sing to the festival last year just as part of their video installations. And have done some recording, but nothing with other people. So it's going to be rather emotional, I gather.
I would think it will. And of course, the voice as an instrument really does need to be exercised. So how did you go about rehearsing then during lockdown? I hear what you're saying, that you were recording some stuff perhaps later on during lockdown, but you know, confined as we all were in the very first days to home, do you just entertain your neighbors, or did I miss something, Andrea? Were you singing from your balcony in Edinburgh?
Well, I stay just outside Edinburgh, in a very, 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 very quiet little village, just outside East Lytton, and I'm lucky enough to have a garden. And the truth is, when you lose in about 48 hours, 18 months worth of work, I didn't sing at all. I didn't sing until June. And I was lucky enough that I work quite a bit for Radio Scotland, BBC Radio Scotland. And they called and offered me a project to feature unsung opera heroes of mine. So that sort of got me out of my funk and got me showering and getting dressed again and sort of facing the world. And shortly thereafter, the International Festival called and asked me to bring my show Sing Sister Sing to their online digital offering. So that sort of cracked the whip at home and got me back practicing and rehearsing and getting ready. And that was the first time I had sung in months. So it was about 6 months, which is the longest I've ever gone without singing ever. So yeah, it was just get back on the horse and practice here in my studio. So I now here at home have a live audio studio, and I have a recording studio at the back. So I delivered much of my content from here at home. So I was lucky enough to be doing obviously a piece I was familiar with, because it was a piece I wrote and have been performing for the last 6 years. So it was good to get back on the horse with a familiar piece, but to bring new energy and new music to it. Yeah.
Sounds like, you know, like everyone else, I think we perhaps didn't really know what was happening back in March 2020. And then the realization that it was going to be much longer than 3 weeks very slowly trickled into all our consciences, I think. So this is going to be an exciting summer for you with at least one live performance. What else are you up to then, Andrea?
Well, I'm doing a new opera in Berlin, Germany, and it's another female-led opera. It's a soundscape and an opera, and it's a women's perspective on traditional opera roles. It's five female voices. It's in an underground space, so the sound is very different than an above-ground space. So we play with sound, we play with each other's voices, and we play with operatic characterizations, and that will also be before an audience. And that is in September. And I have a Sing Sister Sing. My first Sing Sister Sing in French is in Normandy in November. And for Black History Month, I'm working with the Nevis Ensemble on a new project. We're commissioning new work. I'm not only a huge fan and cheerleader for the orchestra, I'm also an ambassador for Nevis. So I'm really excited to be back working with them again after such a long delay. We were lucky enough last year in December to do some recordings together. So that was the first time I got to sing with an orchestra in lockdown. So we had some new commissions that I was a part of, which was really exciting. And then after that, I go back to Germany and perform a couple of Christmas shows. And then I'm doing a modern opera back in Wiesbaden in May for the international festival there. So I'm back busy. I'm back very busy and podcasting and doing radio work on the side. So it's busy. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's good. I sense that you are someone who just loves to be busy and traveling and getting things done. And well, singing is of course your passion. Tell us a little about your podcast. Where can we find that? What's it called?
I've got a sort of a number of podcasts. I sort of fell in love with the radio game when I was asked to do a documentary for Radio 4 on Frederick Douglass's time in Scotland. It's called A Man's a Man for All That. And so I met my producer, Pauline Moore, and she and I embarked on what we didn't know then and found out later was a 3-year journey in Tuscaloosa. So my first sort of podcast radio experience was a 9-part series that we did for BBC Radio Scotland, all about the civil rights movement in Tuscaloosa. And so that was the sort of first go. And I've done pieces on Paul Robeson for Radio Scotland, and I said the series with Classics Unwrapped in the evening. But I work with the Big Light quite a bit. I've been a regular guest on Talk Media, their weekly podcast, and I did an 11-part series all about the Nevis Ensemble in lockdown. So if you go to the Big Light, or as they say, wherever you find your podcast downloads, if you search for Nevis Ensemble and the Big Light, you'll find that series. And it's a great series that highlights an extraordinary Scottish orchestra. They have young international players, but our moniker is Scotland Street Orchestra, classical music for everyone, everywhere. So we do, I guess, what we would call in modern parlance, pop-up performances in shopping malls, at homeless shelters, in prisons, at schools, everywhere where classical music wouldn't normally be found. And we bring extraordinarily talented young musicians to unusual places and show people that classical music really is for everyone. And we get audiences involved, and the podcast actually features the players who were given the task of finding an underrepresented composer and performing a piece on video and audio so that we could highlight these composers and highlight their extraordinary playing skills. So I feature 10 players, 10 different pieces, and I interview the players. I also interview Jamie Munn, who's the executive director, and our two artistic directors. And we just talk about all things Nevis and classical music and a little bit about how lockdown affected us all. And I highly recommend sort of checking it out, because a lot of these players were educated here in Scotland at the Royal Conservatoire. And it's a great sort of look into the youthful classical music scene here in Scotland, and lets people know that there's more out there than just what you see at the Usher Hall or at City Halls in Glasgow. There's classical music everywhere, absolutely. Thanks to Nevis.
Absolutely. And actually, I met the Nevis Ensemble. I met a few of them anyway, one day in St. Andrew's Square when they were playing. It was highlighting the St. Andrew's Day events that were taking place all across Scotland, and particularly in Edinburgh. And yes, it's very nice. One of the things I want to ask you, Andrea, I know you've been vocal about this on Twitter, and I wanted to ask you, you've been striking out a little bit about some festivals using voluntary labour, shall we call it that? And I wanted you to tell me, what is it that's making you angry about it?
A couple of things. We in the theater business, particularly freelance artists and young freelance artists, have been largely left off of any government support. And so a lot of young people, stage managers, backstage, technical people, lighting, players, a lot of UK orchestras or pickup orchestras have literally been 18 months without any money. Now, the major festival, and I'm talking about the Fringe, Edinburgh International Festival, pays their technical people and pays all of their staff. Thank you, Edinburgh International Festival. But the Fringe, on the other hand, has had a long history of voluntary labor. And in the business, it's used as a way to get in and it's used as a way to get experience. But these organizations, the Big Four, have taken bailout money. That's my money. I'm a taxpayer. I'm a Scottish British taxpayer. That is my money. And they have taken millions. And they come to Edinburgh and they charge performers to rent space, to use their technical people. And they hire young people to work 60, 70, 80 hours a week for nothing. They receive accommodation. And in a pandemic, accommodation in a flat with six or seven other young people is not only insane, it shouldn't be practiced at all. And my anger about this is we have been arguing fair fringe, and artists have been vocal about this practice for years. But I find post-pandemic, with large organizations that, as I said, have taken bailout and support money from Creative Scotland and from the English equivalent, to come here to my home city and hire young people for no wages at all is absolutely sinful and devilish. And they don't pay a living wage either. Those young people who work for these festival organizations do not get paid a living wage. Those of us who live in Edinburgh know how expensive Edinburgh is during the summer. We know how expensive it is to get here. We know how expensive it is to have a coffee, never mind a pint after an 18-hour day. And if, as somebody who's a senior colleague and someone who is actually paid to do the festival, did an 8-day run, sold out my show, both of us have houses in Edinburgh in the area, so we had no overnight cost and still only broke even. The Fringe Festival is extremely expensive. It is exclusively expensive. And the notion that as an artist, I would stand on stage and perform and have someone handing out flyers or opening doors or checking tickets who is working as a modern slave, I find absolutely unbelievable and not something that I will support and something that I will be vocal about. And whether I ever perform in the Fringe again, if it makes the heads of the Big Four angry, that's not my problem anymore. Somebody has to stand up for the next generation. And if that's me and some of the other folks in the city who refuse to perform in a venue where people are not paid for their work, then that's just the way it's going to have to be. And we need to stand up and say something about it.
And you are. And by the Big Four, you're talking about people like Underbelly and Pleasance.
Underbelly, Pleasance, Assembly, yes. And I will call them out. They are advertising publicly. I'm not making things up. All you have to do is go to their website, and they are advertising unpaid work, which in 2021 should be illegal.
Looking forward, however, to August, you are part of the Edinburgh International Festival. And as you say, that's one of the opportunities for creative people such as yourself to actually have paid work and to have something to do which is furthering their career. And we are very much looking forward to your own contribution to that and also to the run of the Edinburgh International Festival in general, because it's nice to have something positive to look forward to. So, Andrea Baker, for the moment, and I hope it is only for the moment, and that we speak to you again very soon. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much for having me, and it was lovely to finally see you in person again after all these months. It's been a while.
Thank you you so much for listening to the Edinburgh Report. Listen out for more episodes coming soon, and make sure you don't miss any by hitting the subscribe button now. This is one of the platforms where we can help advertise your business to our listeners. Would you like to know more about that? Then email editor@theedinburghreporter.co.uk. And remember, you can subscribe to have our monthly newspaper delivered to you direct. Sign up today on our website, www.theedinburghreporter.co.uk.